Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
And then, do you feel as though South Africans, white South Africans, fully understand the kind of privilege that they have, or it's something that they just downplay?
I don't even think they recognize it. So for white people, they are in prime positions in society because they've worked hard and because they're entitled to it. There's a lack of understanding. But what I find absolutely morally bankrupt is that white South Africans do not even acknowledge their privilege. Not only should they be acknowledging their privilege, but they should be making reparations for ill-gotten wealth through land taken by force, not through dialogue that the ANC government want to have now, but through brutal force, the dislodgement of black families, the fracturing of the lives and fortunes of black South Africans in this country. So when I raise white privilege, I get attacked from all quarters of white South Africans who are saying, don't speak on behalf of me. I'm not privileged. So there's this complete, I think I say in one of my articles, which is in my book, do white people have a moral compass?
I'm not a big fan of any of this kind of privilege talk, you know, be it white privilege or now this concoction of black male privilege. I think these things are silly. It's, as I said in the piece, if you're in a society that is organized based on racial superiority, then if you're white, you're going to have clear advantages over people who are not white, because being in the white part of society, the white class or the white caste, you know, whichever term you prefer, is going to make you superior. Now, that's going to mean you're economically, politically, morally, racially, psychologically, all these things. That you're going to be superior to what you define as a racial inferior, or in many cases in America, the non-human. So when we have a conversation about white privilege, what we do in that conversation is generate a moral discourse of recognition. In other words, we tell the white person, you have these privileges, so if you recognize these privileges, that makes you a moral person. Notice, it doesn't mean that you stop acting on those privileges or those advantages, i.e. the economic, political, social, psychological advantages of being a white person, just that you acknowledge them. And once you acknowledge them, despite still living and benefiting from them, you somehow become a possible ally to a black movement. Now, this is why I criticize this whole conversation as bourgeois illusory, right? Because the people who are actually oppressed don't get to determine or have any input in the recognition from white people. In other words, you could have black academics having conversations with white academics that in an academic space are trying to make sure that nobody appears to be racist or sexist or homophobic or classist, etc. Everybody has to be these pure moral individuals. And then when that person says, ah, look, you have that racial privilege, you got to get rid of that, they say, they confess to you, yes, I have this racial privilege. I'm trying to challenge it. I'm admitting that I'm a racist. Now we can be friends and work together in a coalition, right? That's a stupid idea, right? When we talk about white privilege, what we're talking about is the manufacturing of moral white people, of liberal white people that can benefit from utilizing the strategic rhetoric of racial sensitivity. So we're benefiting people by saying, oh, I understand what racism is. Here's what racism is. That white person's a racist. I'm not a racist. I'm an ally. And by giving them that title of ally, allows them to work in these areas and work with black people to produce more of this kind of integrationist post-civil rights jargon that says that we should talk, educate, etc., people so that they can get out of racism. The problem with that, it doesn't address structural racism. It assumes that you can educate oppressors out of their racist disposition. In the piece, I mentioned George Jackson. George Jackson said that white people, the bourgeois, the elite racial class, is not going to educate themselves out of existence. I'm not going to own the law. I'm not going to own the military. I'm not going to own the government and let something as silly as a book somehow change my moral characterization of the world, because one is based on the idea of being a good person. The other, i.e. maintaining the imperial and racial state of the world, is based on power. White privilege allows you to mask the reality of the world and simply claim on the basis of your moral status, you're saved, you're coming to God / the idea that racism exists, allows you to become a speaker for everyone else that actually suffers under racism.
context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Monday, February 15, 2021. So I have been told Black History Month also. So I have been told 12 years we have been broadcasting, hopefully sharing constructive information. I think we should have our Global Sunday Talk on Racism. So it'll be twice this week that we'll get to hear from folks in lots of different parts of the world, which is extraordinarily important when we discuss the problem of white supremacy, the system of white supremacy. We're not just talking about one spot on the planet. We're not just talking about a problem that is isolated to one region. This is throughout the known universe. And I guess if it's one thing, maybe there are a few, but at least for this segment right now, if it's one thing that I can say, man, you know, we can stand by our work. We can be proud, stick our chest out a little bit. I think we have been pretty dedicated for a dozen years now to discussing white supremacy, racism as a global problem, even though we are here in the States and we do a lot of programs about racism here. But worldwide, we have done a lot of broadcasts, including over that time period, just focusing on South Africa. We had Rihad Desai on the program. We discussed his documentaries, plural, Miners Shot Down, the Marikana Mining Massacre. Remember that way back when? We had Rihad Desai and his documentary, Bambaataa, War of the Heads, 1906. Long history of white terrorism in South Africa. The mining massacre was mentioned in the book we'll talk about today. Also, we had Sylvia Vollenhoven. I had forgotten all about her. And then I remembered, it's like, oh, wow, documentaries in South Africa. Her documentary was banned. It's called Project Spear. She was with us way back in 2013. But her documentary was about how white people in South Africa, they looted the treasury. You want to talk about looting? They looted the treasury, stole all of this money from the African treasury just before apartheid ended. Wink, wink. Never paid it back. All this, I mean, we're talking like billions of rand, not a few pennies or anything. And so she does this documentary talking about this, like, wow, look at this. And then they banned the documentary. We're not even going to show this. There are a number. We've had lots of white people, too. It just so happens that both of those folks, Rihad Desai, Sylvia Vollenhoven, are both non-white people. But for today's broadcast, what I thought of the opening segment, that was our guest for today's program first. Then we heard Dr. Curry talking about white privilege. But for today's broadcast, I was reminded, I keep this in mind anytime I think about South Africa, one of the best books that we've ever read here on the on the Cows Book Club. One of the best books I've ever read. Medical Apartheid, Harriet A. Washington. We've read two of her books on the program. They were both amazing. She's focused on racism in the U.S. However, she switches her last chapter, discusses the global component to medical apartheid, and she writes about chemical and biological weapons programs in South Africa. This is just a snippet of what Harriet Washington had to say. She writes, Dr. Wouter Bassan's James Bond armamentarium included umbrellas that fired poisonous darts and hypodermic needles housed with screwdrivers. However, Dr. Wouter Bassan was no lone renegade. As head of South Africa's chemical and biological weapons program, he operated under the aegis of his personal friend, South African surgeon General Niels Nobel. The chemical and biological weapons program's most dramatic political function was an assassin of anti-apartheid heroes. One former security police officer testified to the Pretoria High Court that in 1989, Bassan poisoned the Reverend Frank Chikane of the South African Council of Churches, a charismatic anti-apartheid activist, by picking the lock of his suitcase and powdering the Reverend's underpants with toxins. no black South African leader was safe from Basson, according to testimony from by former chemical and biological weapons program scientists at Basson's trial. Nelson Mandela was still imprisoned when Basson's cadre of scientists plotted to poison him slowly with heavy metal thallium to render him mentally incapable of managing the nation's anti-apartheid resistance. Chillingly, the well-connected Basson once cooked dinner for an unsuspecting Mandela at a mutual acquaintance's dinner party. But Basson was most adept at designing large-scale weapons of mass destruction specifically tailored for blacks. Basson concocted a plan to saturate t-shirts with chemical agents, then to distribute the shirts gratis throughout impoverished black townships. Equally reprehensible was the Chemical Biological Weapons Program research on an agent that would temporarily turn a white man's skin black in order to allow agents of the South African Defense Force to infiltrate black groups. Dr. Basson's chemical grasp exceeded the borders of South Africa, targeting blacks in other African countries. In just one incident, Basson's erstwhile lieutenants described how they forced 200 Nambian prisoners onto a plane, injected them with an experimental muscle relaxant that collapsed their lungs, then dumped their bodies from the plane into the sea. The death of activist Stephen Biko is attributed to similar poisoning administered after he was beaten by South African security police, deprived of medical care. That is a snippet from one of the best books we have ever read on the Cows Book Club, one of the best books I have ever read, Harriet A. Washington, Medical Apartheid, The Dark History of Medical Experimentation on Black Americans from Colonial Times to the Present. Again, that book is mostly like 90% about the U.S. It just has that little chapter at the end. And I think of that chapter every time we talk about South Africa. Every time someone mentions the name Madiba Nelson Mandela, I thought about it repeatedly in preparing for today's program. In fact, we might have to start every program anytime we have a guest from South Africa with that passage. That's it. Remember who they said was unwitting and unknowing in that passage when we get to the portion where we talk about who is ignorant about racism. Anywho, our guest for today's program, from Twitter, no less, one of our followers on Twitter. Hey, Gus. Guest recommendation. She wrote this book talking about racism in South Africa. You should check it out, see if she would be willing to come on the program. I reached out to her. Book was just published at the end of last year. Reached out to her. She was willing to come on the program and even shared a copy of the book so that I could prepare for the program. And in fact, she wrote about, I told you, she wrote about the mining massacre, which reminded me of some of the program. And then she mentioned Stephen Biko. She mentioned Steve Biko, and that, again, reminded me of the segment from Medical Apartheid. So super excited to have her on the program. The book that we will read, I'll give the full title here. My screen started acting a little bonkers. I think we got it back together. That was crazy. The full title for the book that we will be discussing today, No White Lies, Black Politics and White Power in South Africa, just came out at the end of last year, written by a white woman. It'll be spectacular to talk to her since she's in South Africa. One, we can talk about white supremacy, racism. Two, the COVID-19 situation, which is, fascinating for many respects, and global. Three, they just had some sort of I don't want to say riot, but mass protest. The police were called out all about racism. And apparently it was some sort of allegation of a racist prom. I had to do like a triple take. Like, are you serious? Like, is this happening right now in South Africa? Apparently some sort of prom controversy where they said they had an all white prom and it caused a big kerfuffle and rioting in the streets. I said, wow, we have to make sure I ask about that too. It even seemed odd with the COVID-19. Like, are they having proms with the Rona situation? Lots to discuss. Super excited. Joining us live, our guest for today's broadcast, Miss Kim Heller. Miss Heller, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much. I don't know if I should use the words, I feel very privileged to be on your station. Thank you so much.
You use the word privilege in your book and in many of your interviews. So, hey, speak how you speak and we'll just listen and, you know, try to make sense of things. Before I get to your introduction, did we waste your time? Were we talking nonsense about Dr. Bassong, the passage that I just read from Medical Apartheid?
You know, it's very chilling to hear that. And I almost have shivers down my back as you read out that beautifully articulated and very painful passage. Do you know, such is the power of white supremacy and privilege in South Africa that this man is still practicing medicine in our country. Can you believe that? In fact, it should be scandalous that this man who was responsible for the death of thousands of black people is practicing as a medical practitioner aligned to one of our big hospital groups. So we have a situation in South Africa that white people have never accounted for their atrocities. That this man is still allowed to practice medicine, which is meant to be a healing occupation in this country, is shocking. He should be in prison, but he's not.
Is he responsible or related to the distribution of the COVID-19 vaccines, or is he just doing, you know, minimal things, basic checkups and such, just on white people? What role is he functioning in medicine?
He's a cardiologist and a well-regarded one, and he seems to be running a very thriving practice. And this is part of the problem. You know, in my book, I speak about the fact that there should be no forgiveness for these apartheid monsters. But in South Africa, whiteness still reigns supreme, and we have a black government that is still in the curtsy of whiteness. So the black government and black people in general, I think, are still very timid when they approach whiteness. We speak about reconciliation, but whites have never come to the fore and apologized for crimes against humanity. And yet black people have forgiven, or the black government has forgiven. So we have this apartheid monster practicing medicine. We have the former apartheid leader, F.W. de Klerk, in our parliament being hugged by senior ANC leaders. You know, it's absolutely insane, actually.
Wowee. We will try to make sense, unpack things. I tell folks on our compensatory call-in metaphors, in the curtsy, she was talking about the ANC and some black leaders in the curtsy of white power. I tell folks to interrogate the metaphors. We are again speaking with Kim Heller live in South Africa for this program. We're going to try to cover as much as we can, hopefully get questions from some of our live listening audience as well. So hopefully you can answer our questions honestly. I know for many conversations, many white people all over the world have disclosed that sometimes they have problems being honest with non-white people. So we'll ask if you can try as diligently, as earnestly as you can, to be as honest as you can, to be super truthful with us in answering questions. If you don't agree, that's totally fine. Just let us know. But that is one of the ways I've concluded that white people often practice racism, in not answering questions that non-white people ask, or doing a lot of pussyfooting, not being direct, giving kind of vague responses. That is very common. So we'll start out this program. I ask all of our guests, I use the terms racism and white supremacy as synonyms. I use the same definitions for both terms. That definition, a global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that definition is accurate?
I think that definition is actually excellent, and I'm certainly adopt that, you know, into my own philosophy. But absolutely, I mean, not only is it a system and a global system, but it's an omnipotent and omnipresent pandemic. In an interview I did last night, I spoke about the greatest pandemic not being COVID-19, but being that of white supremacy, because white supremacy and power, illicit power, ill-gained power, is the cause of deaths, more deaths in South Africa today than what we're seeing from COVID-19. And yet we don't see white supremacy and power and privilege as an epidemic or a pandemic. And the terrible thing in South Africa, and what I write about, is that what happened when we got a black government was that this pandemic has never been treated. In fact, white people are more emboldened now to speak and to jackpot their white privilege than they possibly were even in an apartheid society. So we have this actually dominates society in South Africa, and as you put it, across the globe. It's omnipotent. And I think in my book, I didn't choose my title incidentally. I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to call this book. And I think whites are very good at making sure that they have power. Black people may be involved in the politics of politics, but the dynamics of white power have yet to be broken down. And that is true even in a democratic South Africa that is purportedly under black control.
This is one where I would tell our listeners, that's why I asked the definition, global system of racism, white supremacy. Ms. Heller agreed, yes, definition is accurate. We are under a global system of racism. I'm correct. You did agree with my definition. You said a system exists, Ms. Heller, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. If such a system exists, and this pops up, see how frequently we hear this? This is why I think it's constructive to speak to folks in different parts of the world, because they'll say that here in the States, we have a democracy. They say that all the time. They said that when President Obama was in office. They say it now that we got rid of Trump. Democracy prevailed. How can you have a democracy here in South Africa, anywhere, if we're in a global system of white supremacy? Just ask for listeners to think on that one. For Ms. Heller, use the term, I think this is a term that maybe is used a bit more on the continent, or at least in South Africa, and maybe it's not used as much in the States. The term jackpot. What do you mean when you use the term jackpot?
Well, it's as if you have the lottery system in the States, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
So basically what happened, so it's basically like getting a jackpot. So instead of rooting out white supremacy, what the ANC government has done in South Africa is simply extend the license of white supremacy. And evidence of that, for instance, is that the lion's share, I think it's almost 70% of land, still is held by white people. Now, we must remember the history of South Africa is a very violent example of colonialism, possibly one of the worst examples of the destruction of colonial imperial masters from the West, who came and stole land from black people, many of whom were very successful farmers, and certainly sustaining their own homes and families. So land was taken by force, brutally. And yet, in a democratic South Africa, land has yet to be returned to black people. So when you speak about racism and white supremacy, we must also speak about the structural disempowerment and dislocation of black people, their fortunes, their families, their worlds, their cultures were all destroyed in the interest of building white empires. And nothing has changed. I speak quite often in interviews about the fact that South Africa remains a colony. We are a begging bowl nation. Our president goes to the UK and asks for money. There's no investment in black thought, in black economies, in black academics. We are. South Africa remains a colony.
System of white supremacy. We will explore some of this in detail in the way just that language is being used, because I think it can be confusing. And generally, I think it's done deliberately, confusing language when they say democracy and that type of thing, when we're in a system of white supremacy. And I think that starts to explain why we don't have investment in black people, black thought, and all the rest of the system of white supremacy. That's what we have. We don't have a democracy. One question I've been asking our white guests for some time now. There was a report authored by a white journalist and, a non-white journalist. And he was talking specifically about racism. And he wrote a sentence. He said, "White people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism, but rarely are they pained enough." And I've been focusing on the first portion of that sentence, asking our white guests, based on your studies, I'll even pause there. You are classified, accepted as a white woman. Is that correct, Ms. Heller?
Yes.
Okay. I've been asking our white guests, the first portion of that sentence, is that accurate, just based on your experiences as a white woman, your history, your writing, your studies, time around white, your white family members, friends, all the rest? Do you think that a substantial number of people classified as white that you know, that you've studied, are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism? Do you think that's true, Ms. Heller?
No, I don't think so at all. And my experience of white people is that they'll be pained by racism only when it starts affecting them. So they have, and including myself, I'm not exempt from this. I speak actually in my book as a white settler, as a foreigner in South Africa, as somebody who is privileged and doesn't deny that. And I think the white community is very obsessed with self-interest. I mean, there's nowhere in the world that the white oppressor has given up power voluntarily. And I write extensively about the fact that white people have no moral compass, actually, because we've had marathon opportunity to return wealth, to return land that we stole or our forefathers stole, but we haven't. So when this Madiba Mandela Rainbow Nation came in 1994, the question is, what did white South Africans give up? They gave up nothing. They still control, and I include myself, we still control as white people the stock exchange, businesses, newspapers, land. Nothing was given. So what we saw in 1994 wasn't a miracle nation. We saw black people reconciling with their poverty and white people reconciling with their privilege. White people have never addressed big issues like land return. They'll march in the streets for nothing. They will march against a standing black president, Jacob Zuma, but they won't march against land return, land justice, economic justice. So I ask the question, do white people have a moral compass? And the answer is, I don't think so. They're not ever going to act in the interests of black people. And one of the points I've made in every interview and in my book is that black people must stop having faith in white people. White people don't actually care about black people. And I think the sooner black people realize that, the better.
Right on. Right on. Folks can process, see if that seems logical, if that matches up with what they see. But she said no, she did not think most white people are often sincerely and greatly pained by racism. Let's see. Before I kind of get to more with your book, No White Lies, and some of the other content questions that I had, just with current events, one, the school situation, I want to make sure I didn't get a hold of some fake news. So is there really, like, right now in South Africa, like, they just had some sort of major public disturbance? Enforcement officers had to be called out because there was an accusation that there was a whites only prom and black people were upset about this. There was a march or a demonstration of some sort. Police had to be called out. Did this really happen within the last few hours in South Africa?
That incident was actually either in December or January this year.
Okay.
And there was a school where only white pupils were invited and the black students were left out. But this type of incident is almost a daily occurrence in South Africa, because white privilege is emboldened. So white people can do whatever they want without any jeopardy. So we get this day in and day out, we get racial incidents. And my view is that, yes, there were marches and the EFF under Julius Malema, his party, which I was a member of at some point, went out and marched against this display of white racism, or white privilege and white racism. But my view is that these marches are a waste of time, because every single day there's such an occurrence. I think that there should be rather a focus on changing the structural dimensions of the economy and the cultural apparatus in this country, and be less concerned about these silly expressions of racism, because protesting outside schools, white schools, isn't going to change anything. Changing the structure of the economy is going to change things.
I agree with that. I'm not for protesting for inclusion at white proms and all the rest of it. I was baffled for many reasons to see that this sort of thing was happening so recently. We have those sort of things in the U.S., or at least I don't see them too much, you know, 2021, 2020 type thing, but they are known to happen. The other component, I was surprised because of the COVID-19 situation. They have kind of not had too many proms and things here. And we have tried to analyze COVID-19 also from a global perspective. We've talked to a lot of folks in different parts of the world. And from my understanding, I thought COVID-19, although it's not been a big, in terms of it hasn't been huge numbers of deaths and cases on the continent, certainly not at the rate of the U.S. and some of the other predominantly white countries, well, Brazil, that those types of places. South Africa has been a slight exception. It's, at least from reports that I've seen, there's supposedly a higher number of cases there, higher number of deaths there relative to the rest of the continent. And talking about the vaccine, lockdown, restrictions, all of that. I guess if you can give us details, where do things stand in South Africa right now in terms of COVID-19? Are there lockdowns? Are there restrictions? The vaccine, are you getting a vaccine? Just kind of give us some thoughts on what's happening there.
Well, I think we've had a government and a president who has not really come up with the best solutions for South Africa, and has just mimicked what has happened across the world. So even our vaccination, which was purchased through India at a higher cost, I think, than Western nations have paid, had to be returned because it is not effective against our particular strain of COVID. But South Africa, what we've seen is that the COVID virus has amplified the structural inequality in our society, because for white people, it's been an inconvenience, probably. They've had to wear masks and work from home. But for black people in South Africa, it's been intolerable cruelty, because most black people live in congested spaces where social distancing is impossible, where poverty is forcing people out of lockdowns. So we have totally different experiences amongst the black community and the white community in South Africa. And as always, it is the poor that is suffering, and it's no different for COVID-19 in South Africa.
Wow. With regards to the vaccine, I know here there's a lot of controversy about it. A large number of people, white and non-white, are hesitant about taking it. And then there's been accusations of racism in the distribution, where it seems that there are many charges of white people hogging vaccines, even vaccines that were meant for non-white populations, or white people who don't even live there are coming in and taking the vaccines. Kind of what's the perception of the vaccine? Is it something that people want? Is it something that, you know, is being controlled where only white people are getting access to it?
Well, as yet, we don't have a vaccine rollout because of the mess up by the government ordering the wrong vaccination. So I think a new batch from Johnson & Johnson, which is seemed to be more appropriate, is on its way or has arrived in South Africa or is imminent. And what the government is doing is making it available to healthcare workers first and those on the front line, which obviously is the correct approach. But there is skepticism about the vaccine. And there's a lot of sentiment that African traditional medicine would actually go a long way to helping with a vaccine, but that cheaper alternatives are being outed because of the financial gains, because it looks like COVID-19 is a big business for many, particularly white global companies.
Absolutely. The video that I saw, interview that you did yesterday in South Africa, I was surprised again because it seemed like you all were sitting kind of close. It was only three of you, but close enough that you all could touch one another, and you all didn't have masks on. Did they have, you know, restrictions about that, or was everyone tested? Are there precautions, or is that not a big deal if it's just going to be a small, like three people, a relatively small number of people?
No, I think that's a good observation, and we must be cautious. We were at a venue where we were screened with temperatures taken, masks. We took our masks off minutes before the interview and then after the interview. And I suppose on a television screen, you know, it looks like one is closer than one is. So generally, I mean, I've done a lot of interviews in South Africa, and I must say all the media houses have been very responsible to make sure that there is distancing. I think there were five people in quite a big room, so there is on that side we were safe and responsible.
Oh, okay. I think that sort of information is good. Folks are still learning. I am still learning, so I think it's great to be able to get that type of information, see how folks are responding around the world. If folks have questions, the COVID-19 situation and or the book, we're about to get deeper into No White Lies. But if you have questions on either, the number 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. The book just came out literally a few weeks ago, No White Lies, Black Politics and White Power in South Africa. Just based on the first 40 minutes or so of speaking with Ms. Heller, the word count in her book, she uses the term privilege 71 times. She uses the term power 70 times. The title of the book is No White Lies, Black Politics and White Power. Almost makes me think it should be White Privilege in South Africa. Can you explain the title of the book, No White Lies?
Yes, I think, first of all, No White Lies speaks to this miracle nation of the Rainbow Nation and Mandela coming in and saying everything will be fine. So black people have for the last 26 years lived on the wind of hope, where white people have still maintained their wealth. And I mean, you just have to come to South Africa to see that we've got like huge, vast tracts of white wealth, flamboyant tracts of white wealth against deep crevices of black poverty. You know, so I say that the Rainbow Nation and this new dawn of Cyril Ramaphosa, our new president, is nothing more than a great white lie. I think in my book I speak about reconciliation as a white man's medicine that has done more to harm, that has caused more harm than healing. And, you know, I just want to make a point, actually, that you raised in listening to the insert at the very beginning of your program. You know, I mean, I find the term non-white very interesting. And perhaps that's up for debate because it's almost negating African and black people. And that's always quite jarring for me. But this book I wrote as honestly as I could, not for black people or on behalf of black people, but from the perspective of a white settler, somebody who's privileged, who has recognized that that my privilege has been based on the back of deep black pain and dislocation. And I loved that first insert that you did, because in my view, as told by, to me, one of the greatest leaders we've ever had, not only in South Africa, but worldwide, Steve Biko, he says there's no better white. And I think we must always be cautious of white liberals. So I speak about the fact that white people should have no role in black organizations, that white people should never speak on behalf of black people. That is the height of white supremacy. So I hope I have not fallen into any of those traps in my book, because I'm very clear about my vantage point. And, you know, I think that white people shouldn't be trusted. And I think we should heed the words of Malcolm X, you know, where he's very skeptical of white people. And I think that is the best position. So I speak with a lot of honesty. And once again, when I speak about white power, I speak about this unfiltered, unearned privilege that is really a pandemic in this country, and as you said, worldwide. And yeah, I think that's about it. I think I speak with about inconvenient truths. I'm raising issues that have never been raised in this country before. I speak about the need for reparations. I mean, the fact that there's no reparations in this country is insane, actually. But I think we can't expect anything from white people because they haven't delivered. They haven't come forward to say, I'm responsible. We're responsible collectively for the black pain, for black mothers who can't feed their children at night. And until people in South Africa, black people, realize that their poverty is a direct result of white supremacy, we are always going to be involved in the policy, in the politics of distraction, and never root out white power in South Africa. We'll never save South Africa from white supremacy as long as we're hiding from these uncomfortable truths.
Wow. Lots to unpack there. I guess the big one, she said, Miss Heller said that she speaks honestly in her book. I would say any non-white person in the known universe, anytime a person classified as white says that they speak honestly about anything, you should be highly suspicious. But question that I want to ask, and again, this is just the raw data from the book. At least one thing I can say that is a plus for the electronic books, the word count again in your book, the word privilege, most often white privilege, is used 71 times in your book. The word power is used 70 times. It's mostly, or I won't even say mostly, frequently associated with white power, but sometimes it's, you know, other uses of the term power. Which term, privilege or power, do you think is most accurate in describing the problem that we are talking about in terms of the system of white supremacy and everything that you talk about in your text, the assassination of Steve Biko, the Americana mining massacre? why there is no reparations, no investment of black people. Which term do you think is most accurate in describing that, privilege or power?
I think it comes down to power. And in fact, this book that I wrote is, it's merely a compilation of articles that I've written for the last few years. I'm working on a very big book on white supremacy, but I'm actually thinking about changing the title to White Power, because white people understand power. They never relinquish power. And I love what you said, actually, that we must be careful of a white person who claims to speak the truth. I love that statement. I wish you could see me now because I'm smiling. And you're correct. I think there should be, black people must be suspicious of any white person, including myself. And but white people understand power. They will do whatever it takes to keep control over the economic system. You know, I mean, for instance, our media in South Africa is very white-based. My writings have been featured only in the alternative press. My articles have done, I mean, I wrote one article which says, "Dear white South Africans, it's time to return the land." You know, no editor in South Africa, barring one, would run that article. Yet that article online got almost a million readers, but white media would not publish it. So that is power. They control the narrative. And I speak a lot about disrupting the master narrative. And I use that deliberately. And what my book has done is to disrupt, I think, the master narrative. And I would like nothing better than to disrupt this evil system of white power in South Africa. And I mean, my reaction from white South Africans, I mean, I'm threatened all the time because I'm challenging the very fundamentals of white power. And I will continue to, whatever the cost to me is personally and professionally and financially, I will continue to tell the truth as I see it. And my intention isn't to change black consciousness. It's to try and shift white consciousness. But I don't know if that's possible for a people who are ethically bankrupt.
If white people don't care about black people, which you had said before, then it would seem like there would be low prospects of success in writing a book to change their views, especially if they don't even want to publish a report, much less read a whole book. I mean, that might take weeks or, you know, a month, depending on how, you know, quick, how much time I have to read the book. You said, and you have this in your book, you talked about it being threatened, losing out on employment opportunities. It's just been a tough go of it being a white woman who writes about white privilege, white supremacy, racism. Keeping in mind the segment that we opened with Dr. Basson, making t-shirts to poison black people and other fabrics to poison black people. When you say that you have been threatened, Steve Biko, have you had, you know, poisonous darts, hypodermic needles, chemical and biological weapons programs out to, you know, threaten your life and kill you? Have you had any sort of attacks on that scale when you say you've been threatened as a white woman?
Yes, I have had a deliberate home invasion, for instance, which was very clear about what the intention was. But, you know, I certainly don't want to come across as a hero. I mean, I am a white privileged person, and that must not be forgotten. I'm still the oppressor. I still hold on to generational wealth that has been passed on. So that point shouldn't be emphasized. I mean, every single day, black people are dying because of this monster we call white power, and those are the people whose lives are daily under threat. Mine is of very little consequence.
Okay, she said she had a home invasion, but she's still here. I guess she survived it. What have you? Wasn't a Steve Biko type situation. I will ask, because all of that pivoted from my question about power and privilege. And even during this broadcast today, you've used the word privilege like a lot. And as I said, the word privilege is actually used more in your book than the word power, even though power is in the title of the book, White Power. I have concluded that one of the ways white people practice racism deliberately is the use of words, and they will use the word privilege because that's not really being very direct about white people's direct practice involvement in white supremacy racism. Using the term privilege, it really just focuses on these unearned benefits, and use that jargon in your book. Use that jargon when you speak. So I'll ask directly, you using the term privilege as much as you do, even though you just conceded that power is a more accurate term, do you think that's you willfully practicing racism, white supremacy? If not, why?
I think I must get you to be the editor for my next book, because you're pointing out some fascinating things. And it's not a trip. It's not a trivial point. And language, you know, is a weapon actually in this power dynamic. So I'm impressed that you've pointed that out. And, you know, I think what we need to realize is that white people, every single white person in this world is a racist. And even if I'm trying to write from a truthful perspective, you know, my default position is still as a white privileged person with power. Let me use that in the same sentence. So perhaps unconsciously, you know, I've used those words and the language. And I'll look out for that. I think you raise a very good point. But in the end, a white person is a white person and will default to that. And yeah, you've given me something to think about.
Pretty passive, in particular. We've had Dr. Peggy McIntosh. This is what I mean why I said it's deliberate, because this is not like you just stumbled into this. You've read Dr. Peggy McIntosh, The Invisible Knapsack. Yes, you quote her in your work, so you've read her work. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Guest on our what have we done for a dozen years? Dr. Peggy McIntosh. That's one, all the way back to 2009. And I told her the same thing. In my view, it's Dr. Curry. It's not revolutionary at all. It's not radical at all. They'll give you a long list, just like Dr. Peggy McIntosh. It might have 5 billion things on it, that we get Band-Aids that are my skin color, and people don't follow me in the store, and they don't store us in the Bantu stands, and we'll get first access to the COVID-19 Rona vaccines and all the rest of it, as opposed to these are specific things, ways we practice white supremacy racism. These are specific ways we utilize our power to dominate and terrorize black people. That's being direct. Now we start being specific about why we have these problems. In your book, and you said it already, you describe yourself as a settler, right? On the continent, you're a white woman. You say you're a settler.
Yes.
If that's true, I know Imhon DC, some of our other listeners would say, hey, if that's true, why not leave?
Yeah, I mean, that's a statement, and perhaps white people should leave the country. But white people have decided that this is their country.
Well, I mean you specifically. I don't mean collectively. I mean you, because you admit to being a settler. So you, Kim Heller, why not you leave?
Yeah, you know, I'm not big on individual expressions. So if I had to go back to wherever I came from, which is possibly Russia, it's not going to make a difference. I think in South Africa, what we need is a collective activity from black people, or for the government to have the guts to say every single white person in this country must pay a reparations tax. I don't care how old you are. And that's what I'm trying to push for. But what we have in South Africa is people, white people who are now claiming they're Africans. And one of the most controversial articles I wrote was to say there is no such thing as a white African. So I don't think that white people necessarily have to go back to their homelands, but they must stay in South Africa as foreigners, as settlers, as almost illegitimate settlers. And what we see in South Africa is so much xenophobia, Afrophobia, against African brothers and sisters, yet white people are lauded as the supreme human beings in South Africa, almost as royalty. So white people, I think, can stay in South Africa as long as they succumb to a system of black first, where the dignity of a black child is put before that of whites. I don't think there's any problem with that. They must respect their position as visitors, or perhaps very inhospitable visitors because they have stolen from what they call their fellow black South Africans. But if white people know their place in South Africa, that would be fine, but they don't. They still think they are the rulers. And in fact, because of the timidity of our black government, white people remain fully in charge.
Listeners can evaluate that because of the timidity of our black government, white people remain in charge. Is that true? Process, evaluate. Feel free to dial in if you have a question. My question, you said that the government, because of the failures of the government, you just talked about the timidity. You mean black people? That's what you mean when you say the government in South Africa?
Yes, I do. I'm speaking about the African National Congress. And, you know, I speak, and I think it comes out in my book, that I was a devotee of this party, this liberation, the biggest liberation party in Africa. And I ignored people who said, oh, this party is going to sell out and prop up white supremacy. But they have. And for me, in my political life or my personal life, Marikana, the Marikana massacre, where black miners, mine workers were mowed down for simply asking for a living wage, that showed that we may have a black government in place, but that white interests are supreme, because they had a choice, the government. They could choose white profit or black lives, and they chose black white profit. So that is why I'm saying we have been sold a lie in this country that having a black government will shift anything. And what's happened is that all the ANC has done is to maintain the patterns and the patent of colonialism and apartheid in the interests of white business.
White profit. See, in my view, we're not using the correct P word. And again, the mining massacre, I don't know if all listeners are super informed about that. We talked about that quite a bit back in the summer of 2012. Good time. That was a political season here. President Obama was running for re-election and all that. Rehad Desai, his documentary is great. Lots of footage. Miners shot down. He's in the archives. You can go back in here. We discussed all of that. One of the things that I remember in the midst of all that with the mining massacre, and all of this just goes to, again, my question about when I asked, when you say the government, you're talking about black people. I say, if we have a system of white supremacy, racism, the government would have to be white people. Now, we go to the mining situation specifically. Leon, let's see if that's true or not. Now, that mining situation, I think it's the Marikana mining massacre. That's how it's, you can look it up and all that. But I think you talked about the stock exchange. Talk about white power, global white power. If you look to the stock exchange, I think it's the Lomnin Mining Corporation. Is that it? You'd be talking about Lomnin that is in charge of Marikana, the mining situation. Is that correct?
Yes, they were at the time. They now have rebranded, I suppose, to sanitize their brand, or they've been taken over. But the situation remains. It's a white global company.
Wait a minute. It wasn't Nelson Mandela and Jacob Zuma and some of these corrupt black government officials. Those aren't the folks who were in charge at what was then Lomnin and described it. We'll sanitize, we'll rebrand, so we're not connected. It wasn't black people, it was white people. That's what you said.
Well, Lonmin is a white monopoly capital company. However, our current president was an executive non-director of Lonmin at the time. So in a way, it's quite scandalous that he's the president of this country, despite the fact that so many black people were mowed down on that day. He was still voted into power. And perhaps that's a reflection of just how traumatized black people are in this country, that they would vote in someone like that to represent their interests.
Let's get back. Did you have anything else? Sorry about that.
I think what we face in this country is that the trauma of apartheid and colonialism was never treated. You know, the black man was told that he was inferior. The white man was told he was superior. And sadly, the tragedy is that dogma, some people still believe today. Luckily, it's not the younger black generation, but the black generation of my age do believe that. And I think there's still black people in this country who think they're inferior and the black man, the white man is better. White products are better. White government is better. White media is better. And I mean, that's also a phenomenon that you have in the States. I remember reading a beautiful book by Dr. Tom Burrell.
Oh, hang on one second, because that is in the book, but we've deviated way from my question now. And well read, she is not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. Back to Lonmin, because we're deviating. If we want to talk about who is most to blame for the Lonmin massacre situation, who's most to blame for who's currently so-called president in South Africa, if we want to, who's most to blame for why black people anywhere in the world might think that white people are more intelligent or more attractive or more trustworthy or their ice is colder or whatever the phenomenon might happen to be, the people who would be most to blame for that are white. When we come back to the Lonmin situation, you said this is a multinational white capitalist corporation. You have white people who are interested in what happens with this Marikana mining situation who don't even live on the continent of Africa. Isn't that correct? Yes? No?
Exactly.
Hold on right there. That alone. See, I think you're deliberately practicing racism. You know white power. In fact, let's fast forward. Let's say the black people, all the black people that you say are in charge in 2012 with the mining situation say, you know what? Those miners are going to get a raise. They're going to get a living wage. It's an absolute disgrace what they have gone through. We're going to comply. Now, when they go to the powerful white people and they say no, what happens?
Well, that's exactly it. The fact is that and that's why I was quoting Tom Burrell, because he's.
I don't want to hear any quotes from black people, and particularly not a black person here. I want you, as a white woman, a settler in South Africa, you tell me what happens when white people say, no, we're not going to acquiesce to your demands. We started with Dr. Basson. You are with the ANC. You wrote about the assassination of Steve Biko. Tell me what happens when white people say no to black people's demands. You're not going to back down and we've said no. What happens?
No, that's exactly it. I don't disagree with you. Is that we have black politicians, black judges, black media owners, black business owners who have simply become agents of white.
You're not answering my question. See, you're deliberately practicing racism. Now, I told you before at the beginning of the program, answer questions. How is it that I ask you what happens when white people say no to black demands and you respond with black people who own media corporations and black that's what happens? Black politicians and black media agents, when white people say no, we're not going to acquiesce to your demands, that's what happens?
Yes, not that's Dr. exactly Basson. What happens. I think that's just a testament to white power, that what the white man says is delivered. I mean, I stick to my analysis completely, that that's just a symptom of this untreated malady of white supremacy and white power. is that the black man has no power to say no to the white master. And that is very clear in South Africa, and I assume across the world.
Hmm. You're just saying just buckets and buckets of words.
And particularly the buckets of words that I'm hearing, and this is in your book too, to hear a white woman, and you're an informed white woman. You've read Dr. Peggy McIntosh, you've read Tom Burrell, you've read Minister Malcolm X, you've read Steve Biko, probably Nelson Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, I can't imagine. Robert Sobukwe, I'm sure I could go on and on and on and on. Long list of folks that you're very familiar with. You're not ignorant about racism. For so much of your analysis to come back to blaming black people, that is absurd in a system of racism, white supremacy, although it's, I can't even say absurd, that is so common that is to be expected, particularly if it's going to be to frame it in a rubric of white privilege, unearned benefits, and then to consistently it just falls back on incompetent, corrupt, timid, fearful black people. In fact, this is a pattern where I've pointed this out. In the same interview that you conducted yesterday, Ms. Heller, you were talking with two black people and you said that you think black people have become too tolerant of white people. They might even be said too nice to white people. Is it true that you said that? Can you explain, if you did say that, can you explain what that, what you meant?
Yes, I think that I think black people need to create a universe and an economy and a culture and a society that is completely separate to whiteness. Whiteness is a reference point in South Africa, and that's a tragedy, which is why I'm saying to you that in South Africa, the black man is powerless to stand up to the white man. On the whole, they are wonderful. That doesn't take away from the fact that they are outstanding, brilliant revolutionary activists in this country, but they are not that many. And that is why I'm saying the trauma of apartheid and what it did, you know, Steve Biko speaks about how the oppressor has taken the mind. And that is true today. And for anyone who's been in the South African political space, that is a true assessment, whether it's unpalatable to you or not. I'm certainly not blaming black people. I'm saying perhaps the most profound thing that's been said is in Steve Biko's book, Black Man, You Are On Your Own. And until there is no interest for black people to try and be white, to assimilate to whiteness, to seek white affirmation, they're going to remain trapped. And there will be no liberation in this country. So that is what I'm saying. The black people on the whole in this country are powerless. How can they be powerful if they don't own the land in this country? How can they be powerful if they don't own the economic or cultural spheres in the society? So what I'm saying is the paradigm has to completely change. The consciousness has to shift to realizing that the white man is not somebody you reconcile with. Reconciliation has to happen within the black community with each other. The black community in this country is deeply divided. And as I've said before, that is the teething gel of white supremacy, is to have black disunity. There's a terrible fragmentation. So that is what I'm saying. Until black people are not terrified of whiteness and white power, nothing is going to shift. And that's an uncomfortable truth. And you can call it whatever you want. But actually, that is the truth as it is in South Africa, let me say, from a perspective of a white person. So you can, you know, negate it to that or make it just the view of a white person. But I believe I'm speaking truths to power, and I'm speaking uncomfortable truths.
I'm submitting that you use a lot of rhetoric, the teething gel of white supremacy, submitting truth to power. You use a lot of rhetoric, even white privilege. It's a lot of the same rhetoric that I'm accustomed to. The people who say that white people study all of the whiteness studies programs. And you said you've read Dr. Peggy McIntosh and a lot of the rubric that is used worldwide, and how white people like yourself can come and speak to a lot of non-white people, victims of racism, and confuse them. The same thing that I've encouraged listeners, non-white people, at the beginning of the broadcast, to use logic in evaluating what is said, not just to chalk it up to, oh, she's white. Use logic to evaluate what is being said. Dr. Basson is terrorizing. White people practice terrorism against black people worldwide every day. The result of that is non-white people being fearful. One of the other ways that I think that you are deliberately, willfully practicing racism, white supremacy, and this is consistent within your book and in the way that you've talked to us today, you said, and in the book you write, reconciliation is the white man's medicine. Sounds like another like bit of rhetoric. You said it to us today consistently, and one of the things that I push back on, have pushed back on mightily for the dozen years that we've been back on the air, we would not have a system of white supremacy racism without racist woman, racist man, racist child. And white people regularly describe this as white men, totally leaving out the role of individuals like yourself, white women. Just can you speak to that specifically, you as a white woman, and how you have practiced racism, white supremacy specifically as a white woman, and even putting that in the greater context of white women's role in practicing racism?
Actually, it's so interesting that you raise that, because one of the chapters in my book on white supremacy, white power, I'm going to have to brainstorm with you the right title, actually. But I speak particularly about white women, and that they're actually possibly the most dangerous thing in the armory of white supremacy. I mean, we see that in the U.S. with the slave, the situation with slavery, where actually the white woman was possibly the most dangerous of all beings in that scenario. And South Africa is no different. In fact, in many ways, white women have benefited from black empowerment, because white women are also seen as a minority that are often included in the boards of businesses and things like that. So yes, we must always be alert to that. You know, I think I spoke on the interview last night, and let me repeat it. I mean, you must know Julius Malema and the economic freedom fighters. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So let me give you an example of white privilege. So when I left the ANC, I went to the EFF with Julius Malema. And as a white person, I had great access to even power within that party. To the point, I mean, it's a totally black organization. I was elected, uncontested, as the first deputy secretary of the largest province in this country. And all the newspaper journalists would come to me and want an interview. I was on front page headlines. People wanted my opinion. And this is the real power of whiteness. And I kept saying to those journalists, don't speak to me. I'm unimportant. Go and speak to these thousands of brave economic fighters who are selfless, who have given up everything to be part of this fight for liberation. They are far more worthy than me, but yet you want to speak to a white woman. But so this is the dynamic in South Africa. Whiteness holds so much power, particularly a white woman, that people think my views are very important. And, you know, I'm embarrassed with the book sometimes. I've had such a wonderful reaction, but I haven't said things that scores and scores of black people haven't said before me. But people are listening now. Why? Because it's a white person saying that. And it's a very interesting and disturbing observation. And that is why I've clearly said, I think black people, white people must stay out of black organizations. They must stay out of the black struggle because we do more harm than anything. Why would black people want us in their organizations? And why should we as white people be in those organizations? White liberals have caused damage across the world. And I have the perspective at least to say, I acknowledge that. And I'm ashamed that I took on a leadership position in a black revolutionary organization. I regret that now. I think it was, you know, it was an abuse of power. And I'm ashamed looking back at that.
Context of white supremacy. One of our listeners, Black Mommy in Michigan, she for years, like frequently, asks white guests, whom do you think is most confused about racism, white supremacy, meaning what it is and how it works? Do you think white people are most confused, or do you think non-white people are most confused about racism? And I ask that question deliberately, following up what you just said about your role as a leader in a revolutionary black organization.
Well, I think I repeat something that I've said before, is that I actually think black people are more confused because they must realize a lot of things, that white people are not on their side. That yes, as Steve Biko said, black man, you are by yourself. And I mean, Malcolm X speaks about ignoring white people. White people cannot be at the center of discussion. Perhaps even this discussion tonight is irrelevant because white people are given platforms that perhaps they don't deserve. White supremacy actually is a black problem.
Well, 12 years on the air, it is very rare. I mean, like, in 12 years, I think I can count on one hand the number of people, period, white and non-white, who have said that they think non-white people, black people, are more confused. Like, well, I'll even pitch to our listeners, if you can think of anybody, because I can think of a few, but it is one hand. I don't even need all five fingers. One hand. Wow. That is, I said before, Miss Heller, when she said, I speak honestly about racism, I gave an eyebrow raise. I don't know. Like, I would vote no. I don't even think that's a true statement. But wow, to get a white person who says that is another eyebrow raise. Very interesting. 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. One of our other questions, in my view, super important, because Area 8 sexual intercourse has such a huge impact on how individuals think. And in fact, that was one of the components of terrorism, raping members of the ANC, Mkhonto Sizwe, black members who were trying to fight against apartheid, raping members to make them comply and stop fighting against white power. Have you, Ms. Heller, at any point engaged in any sort of sexual activity with a non-white person?
Actually, that's a ridiculous question. And once again, I just don't understand why you're phrasing things as a non-white. You know, as non-white, I find that very, very bizarre, you know, as if your identity is defined off whiteness, you know. I mean, that term hasn't been used in South Africa for many decades. So I find that very peculiar. And of course, you know, the answer is no. I mean, that is just, I find a very disturbing question. But I mean, sexual infiltration and rape has been used as a weapon of power across the country and across the world in war situations. And I mean, we are in a war situation every day. Black people in this country are in a war situation every day against poverty. I mean, we have millions of people who go to sleep without eating. Poverty is at its worst in South Africa, so it's a war. And the terrorism continues, and in this case, it's economic terrorism off the back of white power. And every possible weapon and strategy has been used to undermine undermine black people. But I think what you're not asking me, which is interesting, is that why are these patterns of deep white power continuing under black government? And we should not shy away from that. There are black people who are complicit in upholding whiteness, and that has happened throughout history. And those people are no better than the white masters, in my view.
Wow. That's what I would expect a white person who practices racism, white supremacy. See how the person, the blame, somehow culpability continues to come back to individuals who are not white. Black people who are corrupt politicians or what have you, they are on equal footing with Dr. Besson, individuals who practice racism, white supremacy. Fascinating. I did want to make sure to circle back. 1-720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Take advantage if you have a question that you want to make sure you ask. Certainly listeners in the States should take advantage. We get a chance to have a listener from outside the States on the program, especially a white person, to talk about the problem. All of that said, let's see. About non-white, are you familiar with Jane Elliott? She's a white woman in the States. Are you familiar with her?
Yes, I think I have read some of her writings.
Okay. She's been a guest on the program a number of times as well, admitted racist. She also was disturbed. She admitted to being a racist on the program. Not sure what's funny about that. She also had a problem with the term non-white, me using it. It all apparently disturbed her. And in fact, she got to a point where she wouldn't even answer my questions when I used the term, which I found that disturbing. Like, what in the world? Like, at any rate, you all, everyone in South Africa is not classified as white or black. Is that correct? There is another population of people there. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. But I mean, I think the term non-white would bring a lot of pain if that's how Africans were referred to. I mean, I think it's very insulting and derogatory. And I'm not sure what the philosophy behind that is. I even noticed when I was reading about your station, I just found that quite jarring. But you keep saying to me, Kim, you are racist, and I find that.
Hang on. Wait a second. When did I say, Kim, you are a racist?
But I want to say to you.
Wait a minute. That's a huge accusation, ma'am. When did I say that you are a racist?
You said that repeatedly, but let me say
when?
To you.
When did I say that you're a racist? Hang on. When? I have not said that you're a racist. When did I say that?
But let's not turn this into a scandalous, sensational thing. You know, let's speak honest truths. That's my business. I don't deal with sensational things. I have said to you very clearly, all white people are racist around the world. So, you know, perhaps we can go into another topic, because I think that's the theme's getting a little bit tiring to me. I've admitted that. And any black consciousness leader will propagate that. If you read my essay on Steve Biko, he speaks about that, and I respect that opinion. So, yeah, let's move on.
Well, I want to stop right there. At no point in this broadcast did I say that you are a racist. What I have said repeatedly is that I think you are practicing racism. That is substantially different. I've pointed that out in specific things that you have said, ways that you've directed the conversation, and even that right there, because at no point did I call you a racist? And I'm just, for listeners, that's very important. That's a part of my code. I don't name call. And as you just heard with Jane Elliott, I said she is an admitted racist. I never just say that a white person is a racist. It's always with that word in the front, admitted. They said it. So it's not just like I'm making a, you know, baseless charge and name calling, even though I'll say again, I think that you have deliberately practiced racism at a variety of different points during the broadcast. And you've never said, oh, no, that's not true, or objected or anything to the like. So, you know, settle all that down, Miss Heller. You're behaving exactly as I would expect a white supremacist to behave, particularly a white supremacist who is in the business of preserving white power. The laugh. I love that right there. No, all the way through. All the way through. The laughing white person. Nothing about what we have been discussing is funny. Now, we'll see if we have any folks, if they have questions. Folks that have questions or they're listening, I'll make sure I get it on my... Do not lollygag. As I said, for the folks that are listening in, you should not be spectating folks in the States or wherever else you are listening in from. Take advantage if you have a question for Ms. Heller. Let me make sure. Got lost in my list of questions. You've had so many critiques, and that's very common for the folks who've been listening to the Cows for any number of years. We've had lots of guests on the program from South Africa, white people, non-white people. I have to say it that way because not all of the individuals were classified as white or black. But it's very common. We even had folks who spent like half the program criticizing Nelson Mandela and talking about, you know, what a no count sellout, and, you know, that we don't have reparations in South Africa. We don't have investment in black people in South Africa because Nelson Mandela sold. Isn't that common, Miss Heller, in South Africa? Even today, he's been deceased nearly a decade now. Those type of critiques that Madiba is to blame for not having, you know, advanced more in eroding white supremacy. Isn't that common?
It is very common. And I think there are two stories to be told. The one is that, you know, some people said he sold out. I don't believe so. I think he tried as much as he could within the understanding the power dynamics at that time to do what he thought was best. But what happened was that both Mandela and the ANC underestimated the power of white supremacy. So that is why white supremacy reigns supreme in South Africa today. And there are black people who serve the white agenda very well. And I'm not sure why we have to sanitize that black people cannot side with the enemy. They have, and they can. And your history tells the same story. And, you know, I think in a way your perspective is patronizing to black people in South Africa and black people across the world, where some people have been, as you would call, the house Negroes in your country. We have those all across the world. We have them in South Africa. We have black people who have sold out black people in the interests of the white master. That is a historical fact. It's not an opinion I'm expressing. And if it's unpalatable, so be it. That's my perspective. And it's backed up by history.
Wow, that is, I have to take some time to think about a appropriate descriptor. It is black. Do they have Black History Month in South Africa? Because it's Black History Month here in the States. I know in different parts of the world, it's at different times. Like UK, they have it in October. I think Canada, I think they have it at the same time. I have to double check about Canada. Do they have Black History Month in South Africa?
Yes, they do.
What month is it?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's now. I think it's mid in the middle of the year. But I mean, yeah, I mean, these months aren't that different from, you know, they should. I don't understand why we have to ghettoize such things. This should be a daily thing, not a compartmentalized or ghettoized into a period of 30 days.
For sure. agree. Well, hey, we only get 28 days in February, so we're overstating things a bit here in the States.
But
it's hey. Many folks have said that. Shout to Carter G. Whitson. But wow, to get a small, I guess, monologue from a white woman in South Africa on house Negroes role in the plantation, like that is historic moment, Black History Month, context of white supremacy. Our caller at 9029. Did you have a question for Ms. Heller? You should be with us.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings, callers and listeners. And greetings, Ms. Heller. One of my questions is, what is the issue you have with the term non-white? What exactly is it that makes you feel as if it's some, I think you stated the word derogatory or offensive. I'm trying to figure out, because I wasn't really clear as to what was the issue you had with the terminology. And if you have an issue with it, do you have another term that would or should be used instead? And I'll mute my line for that.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that question. And if I haven't clarified myself properly, I think that why would an individual want to be described as something that they're not? So non-white, it's as if being white is the ultimate identity, and you are simply saying, you're describing yourself on that. I mean, in South Africa, in progressive circles, the talk would be non-black. So it's an exact reverse of that. And I think ideologically, that is far more sober than an analysis where you're describing yourself in reference to an oppressor group. I don't understand that at all, and I find it problematic.
So if white people are, quote unquote, the supreme as far as power goes, they tend to actually do the naming of who's who and what's what. Meaningly, if somebody is classified as black, or somebody may be actually come from black heritage or black parents, but may altogether be viewed by a non-white person as white. And in the States, I don't know how it is in South Africa, most white people determine most people's quote unquote ethnicity. So I don't know if that makes any sense to you, or if you have any more questions in regards to that. But I think it's something you should look into as far as the power dynamic.
Question lane.
Correct. But I'm wondering, is that something that makes sense to you, what I just reiterated there?
Yes, you said perfectly, because you're saying that the people who define these classifications are white. That my question is, why would you want to adhere to that rather than change the paradigm to exactly the opposite?
So again, so what terminology, for the second question, what terminology would you say would be sufficient instead?
Well, I think there should be blacks and non-blacks. To me, that's taking ownership of the political identity and not being defined by people who turned black people into slaves and who continue today to oppress you. But yet you're accepting a terminology defined by your oppressor. It doesn't make sense to me. Certainly in South Africa, that would be extremely problematic and extremely derogatory.
So what about groups of people that are classified as non-black? What would their terminology be then?
Well, they would probably reject that. I mean, whites in South Africa would be horrified to be referred to as non-blacks. But that's exactly how I think they should be referred to, because we're giving primacy to blackness. To me, you're giving primacy to whiteness in terms of the terminology you use. But perhaps, you know, I don't understand your context and you don't understand the context here. Perhaps there are different dynamics at play. But certainly Yeah, carry on.
No, I was saying I do think I understand your context. I think that I'm not sure that we're on the same page, though. I definitely don't think that I definitely don't know how that would translate when it comes to people that will be classified as Asian, and such forth. So that's a definite question to probably ponder another time. But again, I thank you for your time. I appreciate you answering the questions, and I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, good sir. Our Bay Area mom, did you have a question for Miss Kim Heller?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, what are the numbers for the flu rate? Has the numbers gone up or down as far as the flu? Because I noticed that your COVID-19 numbers have spiked. And that's my question.
Yes, that's a very good question. And it's something actually that I was wanting to look at more closely. Definitely the flu numbers have gone down. So I think the COVID-related deaths and illnesses, you know, in a way, I think it's a blanket for other things, including general flu, pneumonia, and those kind of related things. Definitely those have gone down, and I'd imagine those statistics are mirrored across the world. I'm not sure. In the States, I'd be quite keen to also ask the question back to you and seeing if you're seeing a sharp drop in those illnesses.
Thank you.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Let's see, our caller, victim of racism in New Jersey. Did you have a question for Ms. Heller? Didn't do it.
Yes. How you doing, Ms. Heller? I'm so sorry. I came in at the tail end, so I can only ask a question based on the last bit of dialogue that you and Gus had. When you speak about sellouts, you said that is a proven fact there have been black victims who have sold other black victims out. In the system of white supremacy, what should be done with a black person that's identified as a sellout?
Sorry, I don't really understand your question. Are you saying that must be done by the black community or the white community?
Yeah, black community. What will be your opinion? How should other victims deal with victims that, quote unquote, sell them out?
Well, I think white people should have no right to say how black people must deal with sellouts within their own communities. So I can't really answer that question. I think it would be, if I had to venture an answer, it would be that must be dealt with within the black community. And perhaps some type of rehabilitation of consciousness. But I think we can't negate that is happening. And, you know, I've been saying in certain interviews that I've done is that if everyone in South Africa and possibly beyond would actually read Steve Biko's book, we wouldn't have the problem of sellouts, because people would understand the condition of blackness and all the possibilities of selling out. So that would really, really shift the consciousness. So within that book lies all the answers.
Okay. Thank you.
I definitely don't think that's true, even though I think Steve Biko has some wonderful things to say. I write what I like. Awesome, but definitely not. As long as white power, the system of white supremacy exists, there will continue to be house niggers aplenty. Sellouts aplenty, more than you can bash over the head or deal with. They'll just keep cranking them out. Incidentally, much obliged caller in New Jersey. Miss Heller, who do you think is most to blame for what's happening on the plantation, the house Negro or the white plantation mistress and master?
Who's to blame?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, the main culprit obviously is white supremacy and the agents of whiteness. But I repeat again, amongst the agents of whiteness and white supremacy are black people. And we can hide away from that fact and pretend it doesn't exist. And I noticed earlier you cut me twice when I was trying to quote Tom Burrell. And I think you should give me the opportunity to do that, because he speaks about the fact that the campaign of white supremacy, which has been, he speaks about it as the most successful 500-year marketing campaign, where now white supremacy is so powerful that it even recruits black people to literally finish off the race. And you can shy away from that point. I will not shy away from it. You can label me whatever you want, but that is the reality. Unfortunately, there are black people propping up the system of white supremacy.
Are you finished, Ms. Heller?
I'm finished, and I'm trying to give a something that isn't a one-dimensional portrait of white supremacy. If white supremacists didn't recruit black people, the system of white supremacy would be far less potent than it is today.
You said you were finished, but you started over, so I'll ask again. Are you finished?
Is a white person ever finished?
Still didn't even get an answer there. I'll go ahead and stop there. With all that, I should have interrupted a third time, and I know one of the times that I did interrupt, I was asking specifically about lawnmen, and I'm pretty sure house niggers are not to blame for that. We should be talking. In fact, they did. I think they did. They tried to come around and blame black people and said, oh, yes, they were the ones who went out and did the shooting and organized and all that, as opposed to, wait a minute, we're all the white people all around the world who are responsible for this. But yes, if it was just going to be to get back to house niggers and black people, in fact, within the question that I asked, I said, who's most to blame? Now, we want to talk about hiding house niggers and sell out black people. Now, I asked the question, I said, who's most to blame? The white mistress and white master? She didn't even come back and identify white people. She said, whiteness, white agents. It's even been removed from white people, which is done consistently when they end up talking about white privilege, systemic racism. They have lots of different ways, even, I guess, deflecting the house niggers and agents and all the rest of it. Black people who are propping up the system, it will consistently be redirected. Even the language, the caller who asked the great question, you don't think non-white should be used? That's disturbing. That's what Jane Elliott said, blue eyes, brown eyes exercise. What term should we use instead? Black and non-black. Same thing. We have totally removed the culprit from the center of the dialogue. The people who are to blame for this problem, from South Africa to South Carolina, are classified as white, like Ms. Kim Heller. The book we've been chatting about, No White Lies: Black Politics and White Power in South Africa. Who is reading this book? You said, you know, you've done a lot of interviews and are selling, moving, flying right off the shelves and such. Who do you have a perspective, or do you know, maybe you have that info, who is reading this book? Is it black people? Is it white people? Is it a mix? Who's reading No White Lies?
It's mostly young black readers. There are a few white readers, there's some members of parliament. I've had responses from all over all spectrums of society, but mostly young black people. And as I said earlier, I find it disturbing that people have latched onto my book so much, where black writers have written the same thing, but because it's said in a white voice, my book is doing far better than books written by black South Africans on similar topics. And that is a testament to the white power in South Africa. I mean, I even have people saying, read Kim's book because it will liberate you. And I cringe at those comments because I'm the oppressor. And so that is why I think we have to speak about the black psyche in South Africa, the mind that has been captured by whiteness, And I said a controversial statement in one of my interviews recently. I said it's so tragic that white people occupy black land in this country, stolen black land. But it's even worse that whiteness occupies the black mind. And that is a demon that black people in South Africa, and I would say across the world, have to get rid of. The whiteness in the mind. I did an interview on our national broadcaster, the SABC. And everybody was black except for me. But everybody spoke in English, my language. Such is the power of whiteness. And until black people say, enough is enough, black man, you are on your own, stop having faith in white people, nothing is going to change.
SABC, that is the network that blocked Sylvia Vollenhoven's Project Spear about the looting whites in South Africa. Our caller in Atlanta, did you have a question for Ms. Heller?
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Just to circle back to the black sellout, I think it can be argued that some of these, I guess, black sellouts who are victims are occupying this role because they are trying to find a way to survive in this system of white supremacy. So I'm just curious to know if the guest still believes that these black victims are just as guilty as the white oppressors.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely question and a very deep question. And I think, yes, I think we have to look empathetically on some of the sellouts, because what I label sellouts, and I'm sorry, that's an emotive term, because they had to survive and maybe some people made some very hard choices and choices they wouldn't make. So they were, you know, they were also victims. So let's go back to Marikana. Before the 34 miners were shot down by policemen who happened to be black, there were 10 black policemen killed. And I sometimes think we don't pay tribute and mourn the loss of those 10 policemen, black policemen, because many people call them sellouts. But they had no choice because of the dynamics of power in South Africa but to shoot fellow black South Africans on behalf of the white master. So they are victims. And I mourn them as I mourn the 34 miners that died. I mourn the policemen who probably had no choice but to do that.
Okay, thank you.
That's another moment. You could put a pin there. Earlier when Ms. Heller, when she said that she is honest, I said, ooh, I'm suspicious. You could put a pin there as well, because she'd already said white people do not empathize with, they don't care about black people, and she included herself. So, yeah, I'm just following what I heard before. I don't believe that you had those sort of empathetic feelings about those black police officers who were shot and killed, and or the ones who did the shooting, and thinking, wow, the white power dynamic that I am a part of, we put them in that position. That's how I think of them, not as a sellout and a house Negro, because that would certainly apply to lots of black people. Lots of black people who even don't do any shooting, but neither here nor there. Is it impolite? May I ask, Ms. Heller, what is your age?
I'm in my 50s.
Okay. I would say a white person anywhere in the known universe, a white man, white woman classified, you're classified, accepted as white, and you're over the age of 50. I'd say even younger than that, but definitely if you are over the age of 50, you are very well informed about racism, even about the dynamics of a white person publishing a book where you are ostensibly against racism. You are not surprised about the dynamics of black people being, you know, whoopee, great, this is awesome, and this book getting more attention than a book written by a black person like a Steve Biko or something of that nature. When black people read your book? Did they think, wow, this Kim Heller, she is a white ally. Like, she is, you know, serious about addressing this problem and trying to help us, you know, improve our situation as black people here in South Africa. What's the impression you get from black people when they read your book or when they do interviews and talk to you?
Yes, and as I was saying earlier, I think I've said it twice now, that people have glorified me and said I'm an ally and I'm an inspiration and I'm a, you know, I'm going to help with liberation. And as I've said repeatedly on the show, I reject that. It actually embarrasses me because I do not believe that there is such a thing as a white ally. White people must stay out of black organizations. So I don't know what more I must say to that. You know, you say you're suspicious of white people. I agree with you. Black people shouldn't trust white people, and I include myself. So I actually think we are in agreement on all those things. You know, the fact that, I mean, I was doing a study on, I was helping write a book about a year ago on the roots of black economic empowerment in this country. And most of the history books, most of the history is told by white people. And, you know, it's very problematic. And what we need in South Africa certainly is black people telling their own stories. And I'm hoping we see more and more of that. And in fact, I'm trying to assist some people on that because the narrative is told by white people. And I'm part of that. I mean, I released the book within my first week. I had two national newspapers covering my book. If I was a black person, I wouldn't have that.
I appreciate you repeating the response from the black people in your book, because that sort of detail, I think, is important. And at least for me, gives greater context, because I think you said you had said it makes you cringe. I think that was the exact verbiage that you used when, you know, some black people, they, you know, oh my gosh, this book will liberate us and that sort of thing. And I said, well, I believe that. But I said, wow, it seemed like you had some cringe moments here on the program, cringing when I said that you, I thought, were practicing racism with us. You even spoke out and incorrectly stated that I called you a racist, which I did not, and said it quite tiresome. If we're on the same page, as you said, if we're following the same logic about how I should perceive someone classified as white, it certainly shouldn't have been a problem. He is behaving correctly. He is functioning correctly. And in fact, pointing out key observations about the mechanics of white power on a very specific basis. But that's not what we got. But again, that's what you should expect from an individual classified as white. The book that we have been discussing, No White Lies. Can I get it on? White Guests Only. It's Black History Month and it's still White Guests Only. No White Lies, mm-hmm. Black Politics and White should be White Privilege, because the word privilege is in the book more than power, 71 to 70. And I bet if we did a word count, I don't have it live, but if we had a word count, I suspect Ms. Heller used the word privilege more than power today. I could be wrong, but we'll count them up and see. Much obliged for sharing a bit of your Monday evening with us to talk about the book. I appreciate you getting me the book. I read it. I was jogged my memory of lots of things dealing with South Africa, including Dr. Basson. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time, taking our questions, chatting it up with us, Ms. Heller. Hopefully we can chat again about what's happening in South Africa.
Thank you very much. And let me just add to your word count and say it's been an absolute privilege to be on your station. I've enjoyed the sparring. I don't move away from that. And, you know, to say thank you to your listeners for the lovely questions. I've had many, many people from South Africa tuning into this. I can even see on social media people are commenting. So I look forward to some feedback on the show. And hopefully we can speak again.
Were these
when
black?
You do a show on, when you do a show on non- are non-blacks, how's that?
For sure. Are these, do you know if these are black people or white people?
Yes,
that are
yes.
Oh, okay.
No, you may even see on your timeline some response.
I'll have to what's your Twitter so people can go look and maybe if they can go see, you know, what some of the comments. What's your Twitter and such so we can go look?
Actually, I'd love people to look at that because you'll see historically my perspective. And my Twitter handle is at KimHeller3.
At KimHeller3?
Yes.
Awesome. We'll go check out the timeline to see what folks have been saying in South Africa. Fascinating.
Kim, thank you.
Much obliged. Take care. Kim Heller. Context of white supremacy. As I said, always we should have our global Sunday talk on racism this Sunday. We'll get to check in with folks. Hopefully UK. We'll see. So we've had last time we had folks in Sweden. We shall see where folks tune in, but that'll be Sunday. That'll be irregular time. I messed the time up on this one. It had been so long since we'd had a guest from South Africa on the program. I thought it was a 9-hour time difference. I don't know if it's a daylight savings thing or whatever it is, but it's 10 hours. I had already, I think, done the promotion and posted the program on a number of different pages and, you know, thinking, oh, got it together, boom, boom, boom. Even had my alarm clock set thinking what time I'm going to get up in the morning because here we agreed to do this program at 9 p.m. South Africa time. For me, I was thinking that was noon, 9-hour time difference, 10-hour time difference. So it's 11 a.m. I had to go back, change everything. I had my whole plan. I was going to do yoga in the morning, which I still did, but I just had to adjust by an hour. I think it is daylight saving times. Maybe if I had been smart enough, kept it in my memory, I would have asked her, do they have daylight saving time in South Africa? Maybe I think that's what the difference is. If they don't have daylight savings time, then it'll be 9-hour time difference in about a month, I guess, when we move the clocks up here in the States. And in fact, the folks in the UK, they move their clocks up before we do. It might even be this weekend, but it's coming up quick for the folks in the UK. It'll be a 7-hour time difference. Anyway, racism is global. For the folks who are listening in South Africa, do not be snookered by Miss Heller. We have lots of white people like her in the States that may be irregular for the continent. She talked about Dr. Peggy McIntosh. She has been doing this type of work for a long time. That's a white woman who uses the same type of verbiage, white privilege, and all the rest. She has done absolutely nothing to solve this problem. And in fact, I will link the program with Dr. Peggy McIntosh within this broadcast because they were very similar in their presentations. Check those out. But these type of white people, they are not vested in solving this problem at all. We have lots of them. Timothy Wise, Jane Elliott. She talked about, I'm sure she knows about Tim Wise too. And they use this nonsense about white privilege. Her book title is White Power, White Lies, Black Politics and White Power. It's not white privilege, white power. She knows this is a white woman in her 50s. She's not a young child. She knows the problem is white power, not privilege. But they love that. They will do that skillfully. Oh, yes, I have this unearned white privilege. And most black people apparently in the world, Johannesburg to South Carolina, most black people in the world, apparently, we have been so conditioned, so brain trashed by the system that just having any old white person come out and say this type of nonsense and make some sort of acknowledgement that racism does exist. And, you know, they get some goodies from the mistreatment of black people. Apparently, for a lot of us, that really confuses us, as she said. And wow, this is the coolest white person ever. And oh my gosh, he's not calling us a kaffir and a nigger and the rest of it. And she knows about Steve Biko and blah, blah. There are lots, but we have seen a number of these type of whites in the States. There'll probably be more of them worldwide. They are as phony as can, I mean, extra counterfeit. Extra bogus, all the way to the laughter that I pointed out within. I had to contain myself because I'm so familiar when I was reading her work. I'm so familiar with this. I've seen this. Peggy McIntosh, the Timothy Wise, the Jane Elliotts, we've seen this. There'll probably be more of these folks, even younger versions. Robin DiAngelo's. There are lots of these individuals. They make a nice living, lots of interviews, Zoom conference calls, honorariums. They get to go out and do their talk. Or I guess once the Rona concludes, they get to go out back in person and make lots of money and fly all over the place, universities and such, and give their talks and be experts on Negro oppression and spend a lot of time talking about house Negroes. Man, I was so glad I was muted. It is Black History Month in the States, and to have a white person in South Africa tell me about the importance of house Negroes in maintaining racism. We'll be here tomorrow, back-to-back white women, white guests only, white guests only. Just for that right there, there are a lot of black people who emphasize the importance of house Negroes, and we got to deal with these sellouts and coons and traitors and Uncle Toms. Lots and lots of black people all over the world take that perspective. That is not logical, and white people, racists in my view, I suspect, like Ms. Kim Heller, they will encourage, yes, we got to deal with the sellouts. Yes, we got to deal with these house Negroes. Knowing there is no strategy to deal with them successfully, as long as the system of white supremacy exists, they will just continue to produce more house Negroes and more house Negroes and more house Negroes. The evidence is very clear on that one. The last comment I'll get in really quick, we'll take a commercial and then we'll see if callers have any thoughts to share. With regards to the word non-white, Jane Elliott, she was on repeatedly. In fact, she wouldn't even let me say that word in asking her a question. I said, you're practicing racism, admitted racist. I said, that's one of the ways that you're practicing racism, trying to control the speech of a black male. And I even highlighted that, like, wow, how often does a white person come and tell you a word that's not a profanity, that you saying that word, something is so wrong with it that I need to correct your speech right now? You know, this is not that you don't know grammar or that you've misplaced a gerund. This is, you shouldn't be saying the word non-white. And using the same logic that Jane Elliott is, it's making white people the center. You're identifying yourself against the norm. You're putting white people as the normal at the center and then labeling yourself against that. Why would you do that? And I asked her, isn't that what the system of white supremacy does every day all over the known universe? She said, yep. And then she continued to, and in fact, she said, don't listen to Big Daddy, listen to Big Mama. Quit saying non-white. We did two programs. We had her on one day, and then we had her on the very next day to continue talking about that. And for me to point that out is an act of racism, to have a white person dictating what words you can use to describe this problem. And particularly the word non-white, you have a problem with that? What's the better word to use? Great question. Black and non-black, same thing. There are many black people all around the world who do think that's the way we should talk about this problem. Center blackness, whatever that means. You know, lots of people have different definitions for blackness all over the world. I mean, you can get two black people who live on the same street and they don't have the same definition for blackness, much less black people on the same continent, or black people on the same planet having the same definition for blackness? And not at all. So you can spend the next 20 years thinking about what the definition is going to be for blackness. That's not getting to the root of the problem. That is not putting the center, that is not focusing. What is the center of what's going on here? Our difficulties and problems as black people. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Put that at the center so we don't lose focus. I think Miss Heller, she said one of the handful, I mean literally one of the very, very few people we've had on this program in 12 years to say the people that are most confused about racism, hands down, are black people. If that's true, we need to talk about this problem in a way that keeps in mind constantly, black people are confused about racism. We have to make sure we're being accurate, not adding to the confusion, and in fact, correcting the confusion. If you're confused, that means you either have bad logic or you're missing logic completely for some important concepts. That is the case for black people's understanding or lack of understanding with racism. As such, we should really maximize when we talk about things, making sure we're talking about it in a logical manner, focusing on what's at the root of our problem. It's Miss Heller. White people, not the house Negro. We'll take a quick break. Come back, have a final thought, see if our listeners have any thoughts, views. I'll see if we can check out what some of the folks listening in South Africa had to say. Maybe they've been confused or have been cheerleading Miss Heller the whole time, saying, good job, way to, you know, handle that aggressive Negro in the States, having all of his intimidating questions and such being posed at you. I'll check a look at her Twitter handle, see if any of our listeners have any thoughts they would like to share. We'll take a quick commercial, be right back. Context of white supremacy. Again, we should be here tomorrow. We'll have another white woman on the program. We'll give more details about that once we get back. Context of white supremacy, right back.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? At counterracism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Black brother. Black brother hell.
Context of white supremacy. That blackness. That's in the Mr. Fuller gives that suggestion, not investing a lot of time on black people being black and proud. I was looking for my black and proud sound clip. That is seductive worldwide. That's not just something on the continent. It's many, 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 many individuals classified as black here in the States who, oh yeah, holding tight to that. My blackness, my melaninness. None of that is going to help us solve any problems. None of that. The focus on blackness and negritude and many of its different manifestations, focusing on what white people are doing, things that we can do to neutralize them. That would be super helpful. Constructive information in general, getting as much constructive information as possible, outstanding, but really studying what is it that individuals classified as white, what is it that they're doing to maintain the system of power and domination over us? A huge portion of it is words, really being mindful of the words that they use when they speak with us. Very important. Again, the word count from her book, 71 times she used the word privilege, 70 times she used the word power. White woman in her 50s, she knows it is about power, but she's emphasizing privilege, which she did on our platform. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, any commentary, thoughts to share? Take a second. I'll see if I can check the social media too. folks that tuned in, they're just listening, no thoughts or observations that they wanted to share?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
Listen from Jersey, yeah. Man, I definitely have to listen to the playback. I kind of tuned in late, but I thought about Sue Africa when she went on her, is that her name? White Woman Move Organization, Move Movement in Philadelphia. I thought about her when she started to go on her, you know, black sellout spiel. The thing with this, trust me, I definitely struggle with the anti-blackness in myself, along with the anti-blackness that I see that can be classified as sellout behavior or just, you know, not working in the best interests of black folks. However, I didn't want to go on a statement or a rant, so that's why I just kept it to a question and just left it there. But, I mean, we're dealing with a power dynamic. I mean, to create what you would call a sellout is all based on power dynamics. It's the whole ability to reward and punish, which in a system of white supremacy, black people, we do not have the power to reward or punish. So how will we be effectively able to, quote unquote, deal with the sellout problem? I mean, it's definitely, you know, not logical. And, you know, if I could have made a statement, that would have been a statement that I made, you know, because I grapple with that. As I grapple, when I look at social media, when I look at the news and I see black people going back and forth, sellout, coon, coon, sellout, coon, coon. And at the end of all these discussions and arguments, there's nothing constructive at the end. The person that you accuse of being a sellout is still going to be a sellout, in your opinion, from what I see on social media. And there's going to be somebody to call out tomorrow. But there's no mechanism to reward or punish. So the emphasis has to be on white people. I mean, if that's the case, I might as well just get the shotgun and start going through my own family if I want to talk about people who could be classified as sellout and you know, that's like, you know, most likely to sell black people out in their struggle to overcome racism, white supremacy. It's just not logical. So, you know, that's my observation, but I'm definitely going to go back so I can, you know, listen to more of this conversation, because I just caught the end of it. And for the people that's listening from South Africa, we are still learning. And to talk how we talk, as you hear us talk, it took time. Because there was a time, Gus, when I would probably listen to you interview white people, and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, Gus is just harsh and rude. You know, I would probably, you know, be taken aback. But that's, if I want to call somebody a sellout or a coon, that was the anti-blackness in me once upon a time. That was the confusion in me once upon a time. So I'll conclude with that.
That is a house nigger if I've ever heard one. Much obliged, caller in New, victim of racism in New Jersey. And that is such an important point. Like, we, or I'll address it this way. Man, oh man, there are folks all over the world that is exactly how they view and think about the cows and Gus T specifically. Like, ooh, wee. That Gus is, you know, coon number one. Like, I can't believe he sat there and talked to that white woman. She came on the program and shared her Monday evening. It was 9 o'clock. She was with us from about 9 to 11:15 South Africa time, PM. Shared her Monday evening talking, and
interrupting and talking crazy and accusing her of practicing racism. And who is he? What does he think? That is a disgrace, right? I mean, it's tons of 12 years. It's been 12 years of that. 12 years of that. But it does take thinking, as she said, with some suspicion of individuals classified as white and then just following logic, as opposed to just, oh, we got a white person that's talking about racism and, you know, that's great. She's a well-meaning white person. No, individual classified as white. Let me closely evaluate what this person is saying. And especially once we get to spend a lot of time talking about black people being culpable, that's really popular everywhere. I know, I guess some people might say, well, hey, in South Africa, we have a lot of black people here and you all have had 4 years of Donald Trump and white people in charge and blah, 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 and all of that. It's very popular worldwide, blaming black people. You just heard caller in New Jersey, like, ooh, we, these coons and Uncle Toms and and all the rest. Even some of my family members, I think, are sellouts and house. Well, we could sit around and name call and complain about black sellouts and Uncle Toms, which will be, I was going to say all day, but that's not accurate. It would be a rest of our life endeavor. It would be endless, the number of so-called sellouts and Uncle Toms and coons. And they replace them, too. Like, they die and they just bring new ones in, particularly in South Africa, because there's so many black people. They just replace them. I mean, you don't want to do it? Fine. Got 50 more. Look just like you. Bring them in. Put them in your place. No problem. That's the system of white supremacy. You have to understand that. They can replace the sellout black people faster than you can beat them. I think they dealt with that. The flaming neckties. I forgot all that. Didn't that come up? Fighting against apartheid. Dealt with all of that. That does not solve the problem at all. Dealing, we're going to root out the Uncle Toms, the black sellouts, the black traitors. We're going to, that does not work. Tried lots of Black History Month here in the States. Lots of that. Black people squabbling. Minister Malcolm X, she mentioned him squabbling with Elijah Muhammad and members of the Nation of Islam. Did that solve the problem? No. Dr. Martin Luther King, him being in squabbles and arguments with Minister Malcolm X and other black people. Did that solve the problem? No. Black Panther Party, being in squabbles, conflicts with other black people. Matter of fact, they got the tacky movie out right now. Judas and the Black Messiah. Another example right there of the so-called black sellout and house nigger. Hopefully, I'm not going to watch that film, but I do know what happened to Fred Hampton. The people that are most to blame are not the house niggers for Fred Hampton's assassination. The people that are most to blame are white. Same thing. In fact, they did the same thing with the Tuskegee experiment. We're having that right now with COVID-19. People going around and name calling. Nurse Rivers going out and get your Tuskegee shot. Nurse Rivers all over again. That's the only name we know associated with the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. We don't know one white name in an experiment that was run by white people for 40 years. We don't know one white name. We just know the name of a black female that we insist she was like in charge of this in Alabama in like 1930s and 1940s. That's 15 years before the Montgomery bus boycott. Dr. Martin Luther King didn't even exist as a so-called civil rights leader. Buses and all that, Rosa Parks, none of that happened. So 20 years before all of that, we want to insist that this black female, Nurse Rivers, was the head house nigger in charge of the Tuskegee syphilis experiment and the only name we can attach to this. Yes. That is the logic of focusing on the house nigra in the system of white supremacy. Fail every time. The problem is Kim Heller, individuals classified as white. Women, men, children. Any other folks who dialed in with a hand up?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir. 9029.
Yeah, the question that I asked her in regards to non-white, I didn't think she was going to give a sufficient answer, and I figured it was going to go along those lines of some kind of jargon. But I just, it's getting a little frustrating. I know you just want white people on the show, but I have to admit to you, it definitely strikes a chord and makes you understand the dynamics of power that they control, because she did definitely try to double down, as they say, on the terminology non-white and go, nope, I don't like it at all. I don't like it. Blah, 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 kept on going. And then when she came up with this reasoning of and what we should use, which is black, and that, and it's just like there's so many people that look black that don't classify themselves as black. There's so many people that are black that don't like the terminology black. I mean, we can go on and on and on that. And I think it's a waste of time. If we kind of just focus in on who's actually, you know, in control and causing most of the problems, that's going to be better than dealing with what name we want to call out at the present time. We can get to that later on. And I think I wanted to hear more about her perspective of white women in power and the fact that she is so reflective of exactly those type of white women, the most dangerous ones, in my opinion, the so-called liberals. Because they're the ones that will come into the neighborhood and try to, quote unquote, teach people on how to act and be and set up these institutions. But then the neighborhood will be completely gentrified and all the people they were supposedly trying to help, they never actually end up helping. And I'll say this, too, as far as the information that she's conveying and how deceptive she is that, you know, I listened to an NPR broadcast the other day about Marcus Garvey, and it was a white man that wrote the biography on him that they interviewed, and this white man failed to mention COINTELPRO. He didn't speak about J. Edgar Hoover. He didn't speak about any of the spies that were around Marcus Garvey during that time frame that were committed to tearing him down. All he focused in on was the argument and bickering between W.E.B. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey. And I hear the same type of dynamic is what she's playing out on. And it's noticeable now. I mean, it took me time, like the other caller stated, to get to a space where I'm starting seeing the patterns. But when you take yourself out of the actual situation and view it from a non-emotional standpoint, you could clearly see exactly what's going on and the same patterns being set up. And I was really... in the middle of, you know, Black History Month, they can't even do a documentary right. Like, I was just pissed off while I was listening to it. Pardon the language, but it is what it is. That said, I'll mute my line. Thanks for the show again, Gus.
Much obliged, sir. Thank you for the observations. Incidentally, one of the other reasons I do the remain in the question lane is not that these observations... statements, they are important, but with a white person, especially sometimes when they don't want to answer your question and they're obfuscating anyway, in my view, it's so much more efficient and tactical to just, while they're present, you question, and then once that's done, then you can do your deliberation and statement. But sometimes if you stop and do the statement, you get them off the hook, and you know, they, again, we're not explaining anything to them. You should, in my view, you should be thinking, we're talking to someone they already know. They're not ignorant. I don't need to explain anything to them like, oh, yeah, that's right. I did. That's not what's happening here at all. And we want to try to be efficient, as I said before, try to get to as many questions as we can. But great job. Just throwing that in for extra detail to the caller who was just sharing about white guests only, even in Black History Month, white guests only. If there, and we've had this before, to have a non-white person on the program today with that same perspective, and there are millions of them all over the world who exist. That man, Gus, you said, yeah, the white people, they get on it. Yeah. But we got to talk about these coons. We got to talk about the Uncle Tom. We're not going to deal with racism until we deal with the house Negro. And you, man, you put that out. Amen. Talk about it. We got to talk about the house, and then we'll spend the next 5 hours on the house Negro. For me, if it is another non-white person and I got to have the discussion that we had today with another black person, oh man, that's, I can't take it. I can't take it. I can't take it. Like, we've done that. Like, it is very, very hard for me to have a logical conversation, especially if they can conceive. Now, sometimes the person, they can't even admit, like what I did with Miss Heller on the plantation. Who is most to blame? The house Negro or the white mistress and the white master? And again, she didn't even say, yes, the white mistress, the white master. She said, the white agents, whiteness is to blame. Are we talking about white? What did I just say? The white mistress, white men, white women. That's who's about, not whiteness, not any other ways of obfuscating and moving it away from white people. But like I said, a lot of times you'll talk to black people, non-white people. That's another reason I'm saying non-white people, because some of these behavior, or all of the behavior patterns of victims of rights, victims of racism, they are not isolated or peculiar to black people. They have skin bleaching creams in South Africa, just like they do in Asia, just like they do in Jamaica, just like they do here in the States. So that's one reason out of many, 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 many logical reasons. When we're talking about pathologies and some of the results of racism, white supremacy, you see the same patterns in all of the individuals in the known universe who are classified, subject to the system of racism, white supremacy, classified as not white. Anyway, all of that said, many non-white people enjoy, you know, getting on the non-white people, the house niggers. They are most to blame. And in fact, I've talked to a lot of non-white people who aren't even willing to admit white people are most to blame for the plantation. We've had them on this program where they will say the house nigra is most to blame for the plantation. If we get rid of that house nigra, we'll get this here plantation thing in order. What kind of logic is that? What? Like, that's how we got here? The house nigra hijacked and put us in chains and auction? That's how we got here? That's what's... Woo! That's why it's got to be white guests only, because I can't, at 12 years in, I'm not in, really year one. That was not what the cows was intended for. That is not what I hope to do with the platform. But at year 12, like, I do not have it in me at this point. Like, if you, as Miss Heller said, the people who are most confused about racism, black people, non-white people, that being the case, let's talk to the expert. That way we're talking to the experts and we're hearing things that are super illogical and don't make sense. Like, we keep coming back to, we got to focus on the house niggers, the house. Or I don't like you using the term non-white. Why? Why don't you like using the term non-white? And then listen to what she, now does that make sense? What should we use? Great question. That's what I mean. You just follow with the questions. You don't take, you know, question, what should we use? And listen, black and non-black in a system of white supremacy? I thought they said it's 1 billion people in China, more than that. But I'm, you know, what do I do with them? Are they black people now? Are they white people? Like, what? Are they non-black people? That's how, is that helping me logically understand what's happening here? Just using logic.
Hey, Gus.
Yes, sir.
Gus, if I could add, because you spoke about something, and I just spoke about this, and I was talking about patterns. And I remember Dick Gregory and also Frances Cross Welsing, she reinforced what Dick Gregory said about reading papers. And it just seems like once you notice the patterns, you know what I mean? Some people, you know, a lot of times you may get classified as you know it all. But I've come to a lot of conclusions just based on patterns. I mean, even when we're looking at the patterns, not to veer off from what we're talking about, with now, it went from Black Lives Matter to black people are practicing racism and assaulting Asians. Before that, it went from police brutality to the incident in Jersey City and Jewish people, black male killed a Jewish person, was tied into some quote-unquote black extremist group. And it went from black racism towards Jewish people, then it veered off into Farrakhan being deplatformed off of social media. These are all clear patterns. And if you just basically pay attention to the patterns, things will just start to, you know, you will see things a lot clearer. Because I think that they have perfected a system that has worked for over 500 years or longer, and they have not deviated from the plan. They haven't. Just pay attention to the pattern. It's right there.
Why would they change? Or they refine? Certainly they refine, just like, you know, the software, they have updates. But I mean, why would you make any major changes if you have non-white people so confused? What do they say? If it ain't broke, don't fix. You just make your adjustments and what have you. Make your upgrades, your refinements. Psh. System of white supremacy racism. Dr. Welsing encouraged us to, you know, pattern recognition, connecting the dots, as she would say, in terms of the different incidents that are happening and making sure we get an accurate understanding. Anywho, folks listening in South Africa, we've had a number of programs, guests from the continent, South Africa specifically, on the broadcast. As I said, Rihad Desai, Sylvia Vollenhoven. We had our book club on Madiba, Long Walk to Freedom. We had a white man, Christopher Clark. We had a white female physician. I just forgot her name. I have to go back in the archives to get that, because I was saying we should get her back on the program to discuss the Rona situation. But we've had many folks from South Africa. More than that, I'm just trying to think of folks I can, you know, think of right now. But even when Madiba passed, we've had other white people on the program. I have to go back and look. Jillian Shoot. Forgot she's been on the program many times. That's a cowbell. In fact, Jillian Shute, married to a black male. Now, she says she's an activist and has, you know, fought hard against racism on the continent and blah, 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 and all this. But she's married to a black male. That's why I asked that question about Miss Keller. Have you been engaged in any sexual activity with a black person? That right there is another way that white people often practice racism. But that's, you know, another discussion. In the archive, Jillian, many programs. We've had visitors from South Africa that we discussed the mining situation and lots of things. Some of the with what was happening with the university fees a few years back. I think that was like 2016, 2017. A number of guests. We'd make an effort regularly to discuss this problem, white supremacy globally. Any other folks who want to make sure they get a comment in before we get ready to conclude today? Caller in Florida might have missed the broadcast. I did get the incorrect time up originally, but caller in Florida.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone.
Greetings. Did you have commentary just listening?
Oh, well, of course I missed everything. I will listen to the archives. Did the guests show up?
Yes, sir. The program started at 2 p.m. your time. So we've been here for about 2.5 hours. She was here for 2 hours, 15 minutes.
Okay.
And yep. Answered questions and practiced racism, in my opinion. But yes, did the program. And then we did our 20 minutes debrief about what she shared. She even, if you remember way back, she did some of the classics. She said that she was trying to remember her exact words. She said she found it. Was it dissettling? Oh, it was a D word. I have to go back. I know she said that she had cringeworthy moments about black people thinking that she was an ally or great or whatever it was. And it seemed to me she had more cringeworthy moments on this program when I pointed out how she was practicing racism by using the word privilege repeatedly, white privilege, even though her book is titled uh-huh. Power. But she said she was upset. It was a D word, but she said she was like upset or offended with me using the word non-white. which I thought was important. Whoa. And it was exactly what Jane Elliott did way back when, which is interesting because I asked her and she said she knew about Jane Elliott. She quotes Peggy McIntosh in her book. And I was saying, see, she studied these white people. She uses the same type of rhetoric and language heavily. But that's exactly what Jane Elliott said. She didn't like non-white. And a caller dialed in and asked why. Give us, you know, more reasoning why you don't like that term. She's, oh, well, it's centering white people. And, you know, where's the focus on black people and blackness? And black people would hate that here in South Africa. Blah, blah, blah. So, okay, so what should we use instead of non-white? She said, well, black and non-black. That's what you should use. That was some of the highlights from her commentary,
yeah,
I'll say.
Yeah. I may have missed it, but yesterday I was on a Zoom program where we discussed and exchanged views primarily about the system of racism, white supremacy, and the question that was brought up about South Africa as far as the term reconciliation. and someone put it in the terms of a question to everybody, and I stated that it is very illogical to even fathom anything like reconciliation, and your enemy, your abuser is in the process of still abusing you. you are mentioning about reconciling with someone who is in the process, the present process of abusing you, you know. But anyway, it was a constructive conversation yesterday, and it sounds like it was one today where there's some learning involved by the victims in the process of the guests coming on. And that's primarily, I think, on why you have white people on anyway. It's for us to be able to learn and also practice on correct counter-racist communication with white people. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Hopefully folks got opportunity to learn a little bit. Even our guest recognized the tackiness in so-called reconciliation, but she just switched and provided her own unique brand of tackiness within the dialogue. Let's see. Our caller in Pennsylvania, T in Pennsylvania. Did you have commentary?
Hi, Gus and listeners. I found the interview quite interesting. I am a South African living in Pennsylvania, and unfortunately, I only got the interview towards the end. But there's a few things that I have found interesting. So first of all, there is no Black History Month. To answer your question, Gus, there is no Black History Month in South Africa. There are days that commemorate certain parts of history, but there is no Black History Month. And then the second thing is the commentary on the social media from South Africans is quite interesting. The name calling and people sort of defending Kim Heller. And then my last commentary is about an article that I found of hers where she described herself as, it was an interview, and she described herself as the black sheep of white people. And considering that she said that people should refer to themselves as non-black and black, so that was pretty interesting, but I hope to listen to the entire broadcast and sort of understand what exactly she was saying. So, and I mute myself.
Fascinating. I'm so glad you were able to share. I'm not surprised at all. That is not a regional thing. You can go all the way back. Matter of fact, we can stick with Jane Elliott. So the first time she's been a guest on the program repeatedly. So the very first time she was a guest on the program, it was January 2010. She came on. That was when she, you don't listen to the plantation daddy. You listen to the plantation mammy and Big Mama on the plantation. You listen to Big Mama on the plantation. So don't say non-white. In fact, I don't even remember what word. Was it person of color? I don't even remember what word she thought should be used in place. But no non-white. And I'm not going to answer any questions if you do. And I said, I think that's an act of racism on the part of Jane Elliott, among other things. And I think she admitted on the first program that she was a racist, certainly by the second program. But I believe the first program, she left just like today. She was with us for, I don't know, 2 hours, whatever it was. She departs and victims literally in the States call in to do exactly that. Like, wow, that Jane Elliott is awesome. She was great. She came on here and answered all the questions. And now you're just going to sit here and say that she practiced racism and trying to tell you not to say. Look at how are you going to focus on that and all of the great things that she came and it was tons. And we've had that repeatedly almost every time. Timothy Wise, another admitted racist, came on the program. It was, oh my gosh, Timothy Wise is amazing. I can't believe he sat here and tolerated that no count Gus. Who is he going to sit here and ask him questions and be suspicious of his motive where he comes and does this out of the goodness of it? They have the brain trashing is phenomenal worldwide in terms. And they know this. She said this. She should be saying, hey, he is correct. You should have suspicion. She said, it's cringeworthy when I see black people out here. Oh, Kim Heller is great. She's an ally. No, she should be telling them on social media that no count Gus. He might be a house Negro, too. He might be a sellout, too. But at least be suspicious. Don't be defending me. At least be suspicious. They don't do that. And black sheep. She said, so-called the black sheep of the white race, whatever that means. That is in the word guide. We talked about that sort of thing regularly. She had the audacity. I asked her about that at the beginning of the program, like, because she says she's been vilified and attacked and all the rest of this. Like, really? Attacked like Steve Biko attacked? Like, attacked like Nelson Mandela attacked? And she said, oh, no. But she said she had her house broken into and, you know, some other nonsense. The word guide, she said, or Mr. Fuller writes, black sheep of the family. Do not use this term. When others use it, ask for a detailed explanation that you can easily understand. What exactly does it mean for a person to be called the black sheep of a family? Why black? Is there something incorrect about being black? Is there something incorrect about a sheep being black? About a person being black? If so, what? If so, according to whom and for what reason? Note, this expression has often been used in a manner that has directly or indirectly helped to promote thought, speech, and action that are destructive to black, non-white people. This expression helps promote thought, speech, and action that glorify white supremacy. That's all he has on that term. I'm just taking a gander quickly to see if House Negro is in the book, because at minimum, that would be name calling. And it's so ubiquitous sometimes I don't even think about it that, oh, that is name calling. If this person hasn't said, yes, I am a house Negro. That is what I am supposed to be called. That's what you call me when you see me, house Negro. If that is not the case, that is name calling. And there is a lot of that encouraged in the system of racism. We talked about that in the O.J. Simpson trial and many other instances, like all that sellout. All of that is name calling. If that person has not identified, and that's why I say admitted racist. When I say Jane Elliott, admitted racist, Tim Wise. I do not label folks as house Negroes, sellouts. I've never heard anyone say that they are. And beyond all of that, that's another one. What do we mean when we say sellout? Because I mean, once you attach a definition to that one, like, ooh, depends on, you know, how broad of a definite, like, what's the cutoff in terms of, you know, how much serving of white people do you have to do before you are also guilty of being a sellout? Uncle Tom, House Negro, whatever term you want to attach to it. So, you know, don't get too carried away with that. That label invariably might end up attached to you at some point. It's, wait a minute now. We should have some empathy for the House Negroes. Anywho, we will be here tomorrow. Normal time, we'll be back to White Person from the States, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. She does research on the history of white mob violence, not House Negro violence, white mob violence, and contrasting that to what's happening now. And again, bringing back in the role of white women in this mayhem. But that'll be tomorrow, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. White guests only. White guests only, even in Black History Month. Much obliged for folks tuning in all, you know, irregular time and everything. Hope it was worthy of your Monday evening. I was hanging out on Zoom. Retired firefighter said he did his Zoom. I did yesterday. I was with Dr. Ruby Lathan, her family. They did a cooking workshop to show how to make like some desserts. And she did a whole like meal in case folks were doing the so-called holiday for Valentine's, if they were going to stay in and just try to prepare something like a so attempted couple type of a thing. And was awesome to pick up some. She did, of course, all vegan, all plant-based. And I think it was all Black people there on the Zoom call and everything, asking questions and trying to get tips and ideas and what have you. But was awesome. You can check out her website, her name, RubyLathan.com, to get more information and see when she's going to be doing other workshops if you want to try and get some more tips. And she took questions, right? Like she was doing her recipes, and then you could hop in and ask a question. If you don't want to be on camera and all that, you can, you know, hide the screen and everything and just get your question asked. Or you could even type it, you know, in the chat room if you have cooking questions and just want to get ideas about transitioning or how to get your children, you know, into all of it. Bang, right there you can ask. And in fact, you can even cook right along with her. Some people did that and ended up producing the exact same beautiful entree that she delivered. So yeah, feel free, check it out. Was awesome. Always try to promote healthy eating when possible. I think that is way more constructive, promoting healthy eating, than promoting a focus on House Negroes. I hope all the folks who are in areas with inclement weather are warm, safe, have electricity, and are, you know, staying for real. Stay hunkered down if you don't have to be out and about. I think Texas and some other places, and though we had big snow here all throughout the weekend, it's just beginning to clear as the temperature is rising a little bit. But, man, stay safe, stay warm. Winter. Another form of white supremacy with the precipitation. That's it. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We will need our brain computer to make sense of the nonsense. Try to use some logic to solve the problem. In addition to being sober, I recommend being inside. We got really bad weather in parts of the U.S. We got the Rona worldwide. We got white supremacy, racism worldwide. I know in the U.S. specifically, lots of armed white people, lots of armed people, period, but lots of armed white people under all of the stress and chaos. If you're going to be out and about, I would be very alert to what is happening around you. If people are being violent, loud, hostile, out of there, like no risk taking right now. And in fact, you should be thinking in the U.S., if you see somebody being volatile like that, this person is probably armed. They may even be looking to instigate some sort of conflict, and they may have a whole militia with them, also armed, also ready, licking their chops, as they say, for conflict. If you didn't leave your house prepared to die and kill, get out of there immediately. If you have to call, you know, if you want to call enforcement officers or whatever, do that as you're exiting. Real risk averse in 2021. It has been very dangerous for a long time. All of that said, you are sober, driver or passenger. You're buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. Just doing everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. Small things, being sober, being buckled, not on the cell phone, trying to get away from the Mark Furmans if we can. And we need all of our attention. Volatile times, we want to be alert to what is happening around us. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in conflict with another black person. No name calling. I've been ending many programs saying that, but apropos for today, no name calling. That would retire the house niggers, the sellouts. That would retire all of that right there. No name calling. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.